Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. Could everyone please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent profile? Please try to keep disruptions to a minimum. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. In view of our singleness of purpose, respectfully ask that sharing be confined to alcoholics. And when discussing our problems, we confine ourselves to those problems as they relate to alcoholism. There may be visitors here who are unfamiliar with our tradition of anonymity. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television. This tradition is a constant reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. We are sure that anonymity is the greatest safeguard Alcoholics Anonymous can ever have. We therefore seek your cooperation and protecting the anonymity of our members at the public level. The format of tonight's meeting will be 3 10-minute speakers, followed by a fourth speaker until approximately 8:30. The meeting will then be open for sharing from the floor and closed at 9 o'clock. Can we have a moment's silence to remember Tradition 5? Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Thank you. Our first three speakers tonight will be Nick, Tommy, and Mary.
My name is Nick, I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, it's a privilege to be sharing in front of my home group, you know, and I'd like to thank Wayne for asking me to share. And the reason for sharing tonight is to carry a message to a still suffering alcoholic, you know, and I was sat there feeling a bit self-centered, and I remembered what AA has done for me. You know, AA is not just taking the obsession for alcohol away; it's given me a life which I've never known. You know, and my experience of drinking. You know, I grew up very, very, very self-centered, very shy, sensitive. You know, and I found speaking to people hard. I mean, I really couldn't speak to people. This is just an example of how self-centered I was, and I do like to share about it sometimes. When I remember going out with a girl at 16 years old, and I couldn't speak to her unless I was drunk. I couldn't speak to her, you know, and if I was sober, I wouldn't say nothing to her. I'd just walk past her, I wouldn't even look at her, do you know what I mean? And I'd be going out with her for 6 months at the time, do you know what I'm saying? It's not like a day, do you know what I mean? That's how self-centered I was, you know. And I should have known then it was something wrong. I should have known then, you know. And, you know, but that was the good days, you know. It got worse. My drinking got a lot worse, you know. And in the end, I was drinking, you know, all the time. All the time, really, you know. And when I wasn't drinking, I was uncomfortable. As the big book says, I was restless, irritable, and discontent, you know. And there was loads of consequences to my drinking as well, you know. And it's a progressive illness, you know. And my drinking got worse and worse and worse, you know. And, you know, I remember when I landed in Plymouth, you know, I'd after years, really, of prisons, homelessness, and getting kicked out of the treatment centres again and again. You know, I landed in Plymouth in a halfway house, and I didn't believe AA would work for me. I didn't. You know, I came to Plymouth hating AA. I really did. You know, when I was in treatment, I was going to meetings and, oh, no one ever said to me, you know, if you get a sponsor, you're doing the steps, you can recover and you can have this life. Maybe they did. Maybe I was so self-centered and so self-obsessed I missed it, you know. But when I came into this meeting, this group on a Tuesday night, the message was there. I couldn't miss it. I couldn't, you know, and it was like, thank God, you know, because I was in trouble. I really was in trouble, you know what I mean? And I was at the rock bottom. And it wasn't the prisons, it wasn't the homelessness, it wasn't getting kicked out of a treatment centre. It was sober. I realised there and then I was in trouble. I mean, I couldn't do life sober, you know? My days were basically, I'd get up in the morning and I would think. And think and think and think. That's all I would do, you know? I'd go into town and I'd go home and I'd be analysing everything. I seemed to hate the world. It seemed to be me against the world sober. Do you know what I mean? Everyone was out to get me, you know? I was so uncomfortable sober. Do you know what I mean? And I remember going home to my halfway house and I'd have the telly on and I'd have the radio on and my head would just be going non-stop. You know, that's me sober. Do you know what I mean? I'd be analysing everything. If someone looked at me one day, I'd be still analysing it 4 days. Why did she look at me like that for? Do you know what I mean? 4 days on, you know? Why did he say this? She say that? He say this? I was bonkers. My head was, I was nuts. You know, and that's when I knew I was in trouble. I really did, you know. And thank God for this group, you know, because I heard the message. And loud and clear, everyone said the same thing. You know, get a temporary sponsor after the meeting, you know. And get a big book. I love the big book today, you know. I love that book, you know. I identify so much with that book, you know. And I can honestly say, as soon as I got a sponsor, you know, I felt hope like I haven't felt for a long, long time. You know, and my sponsor gave me simple suggestions to do. I didn't analyse them, which was quite mad, really, because I was analysing everything at the time. And I started doing these simple suggestions, and I started to feel better. You know, and then my sponsor said, you know, step one and two. He started me on the first three steps, and he started me on step three. You know, I got down on my knees and I prayed to a higher power, which I didn't understand. I didn't understand. Do you know what I mean? I remember going down on my knees and actually laughing at the time, you know, because I didn't understand, you know, but I did it. You know, I said the step three prayer and I did it, do you know what I mean? And I got to step four, you know, and I couldn't wait to get all that stuff. I was looking forward to step four as soon as I came in. As soon as I seen step four there, the way my head was, I couldn't wait to start writing this rubbish down which was in my head, do you know what I mean? And I had three columns, and I had these 14 defects of character, and I started writing my resentments down, and I started getting that third column, and looking at me, I'm realising that I blamed everyone when I drank. I blamed everyone. I'd get kicked out of the treatment centre, but it was their fault. But I was drinking, that's why they threw me out. How was it their fault? I blamed everyone for everything, you know? And I realised on step four, it was me. You know what I mean? And step four was an amazing tool for me. I mean, it really was, you know, because it showed me how to do step tens. You know, and coming to step five, you know, when I was told, when I read this out to another man, my sponsor, that it would be an amazing feeling, you know, it would be a fantastic feeling, you know, and I went in a bit skeptical, thinking, here we go, and I read this stuff out to my sponsor, all this cringeworthy stuff, and I had to laugh at some of it. It was creepy, some of the things I had to read out of this other man, you know. 2 days later, I felt amazing. I really did, and that's when I really knew this was going to work for me. I really felt amazing. You know, I walked into town meeting up with the guys, and I was buzzing. And I mean buzzing. Do you mean it was electric, you know? And that's when I knew this was going to work. And I wanted more. I wanted a lot more, you know? And 6 and 7, I handed it over to my higher power, and I got to step 8, and I thought, oh, more writing. Oh, this is like A-level AA. Do you know what I mean? More writing again, you know? But people made promises in step 9, there's promises, you know, and I wanted to get there, do you know what I mean? Because I didn't think you could beat step 5, I didn't, do you know what I mean? I really didn't, and I cracked on in my step 8, you know, and I got to my 9s, and my sponsor said, well, go home now, make amends to your family, you know, and I went home and made amends to my brother, my parents, and my mum was brilliant, she gave me a big hug, and my dad just went all manly and said, oh, it's okay, don't worry about it, the main thing is you're okay, you know, and my brother done the same, you know, and the most amazing thing about my amends to my brother was that he gave up on me. He gave up on me in prison. He said, leave him here. He gave up on me, you know, and after making this amends, about a year later, my brother was at my wedding, and he came up to me and he said, you know what, bruv, I'm really proud of you. And that was the best amends I could have had, you know, because the man gave up on me, do you know what I mean? This is all because of AA. Nothing to do with me, this is AA. And, yeah, step 10s. Thank God for step 10s. You know what I mean? Step 10s, I got a way of dealing with my daily resentments. You know, I'm, as my sponsor says, I'm a touchy person. I need a way to deal with this stuff. You know, I love my step 10s, you know. And I just got a light. So step 11, do you know what I mean? Higher power. I've got a higher power in my life, do you know what I mean? I've got a higher power in my life, and it is amazing. This is what the steps are all about. It's amazing. You know what I mean? My life has changed. I've had a change of thought and attitude, a spiritual awakening from doing the steps. And I cannot recognize my life. I cannot. When I came into this meeting, I was a bum. I come from the gutter to a life I've never known. I've never known a life like this. I've been married, and I'm married in recovery. I mean, I've got a wonderful wife. I'm working today. Which, I mean, last job I was in prison packing tea bags and I got sacked. You know? And it's not just that, I've got a peace of mind and contentment which I've never known. Never known. I can speak to anyone today without having to analyse it 4 days before and after. My life's just amazing today. And I'll leave it there. It's amazing. Thanks.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Tommy. I'm an alcoholic. It's quite a tall order having a shout after the most enthusiastic person in the meeting, but I'll do my best. It is great to be here. I came here 3.5 years ago and I was in big, big trouble. I mean, I wasn't a bum like Nick, but I was pretty bad. You know, I was a complete loser. I mean, I didn't drink for that long, but, you know, I was completely on my ass when I came here and I was just desperate for a new life. You know, I came here, just did what people were asking me, basically. Did this program 100%. And my life has changed. You know, I'm a different person from doing this program. And I was quite different to Nick. I mean, I didn't drink every single day. I mean, I was probably, throughout my drinking, I was sober more often than I was drunk. I'd drink in the evenings. I was a binge drinker. But the thing that made me different is that once I started, I had no control over what happened. I'd go out, I would drink, and I would change. I mean, I was quite a shy person. I wouldn't say boo to a goose when I was sober. I'd have a few drinks and I would just change. I mean, it just gave me the confidence which I didn't have when I was sober. You know, I could really talk to people. I just loved it. And that was after about 4 pints. After 5 or 6, I would just snap. I'd become aggressive and violent. And you know, the consequences were horrific. Do you know what I mean? You know, they really were horrific. I mean, I was a terrible person. The things I was doing to people. And you know, I had a good upbringing, do you know what I mean? None of my family are like this, do you know what I mean? I got parents who would do anything for me, and they did. I went to a grammar school, I had a lot of potential. I was, you know, always top of my class up until the age of about 14 when I started drinking. I wanted to go to university, you know, I had a lot of ambition and all that. But, you know, I'd never felt comfortable when I was sober, and it was at the age of, you know, 13, 14 when I really started drinking, I just remember making a decision at that age that I loved this. You know, this is great. When I'm drunk, I feel good. Life's exciting. When I'm sober, life's boring. Do you know what I mean? So it wasn't a difficult decision. I just knew that I had to get drunk as often as I could, because it was the only way I could enjoy life. And you know, it started off every Friday without fail, then every Friday and Saturday, and then it became weeknights as well. And I knew I had a problem right from the word go, because, as I said, I was very quiet when I was sober, and I was getting so much trouble. And you know, it was quite clearly the drink that was doing it to me, and I lost all interest in the things that should have been important to me, like schoolwork and all that. My grades started slipping big time. Started getting into a lot of trouble in school. I was getting letters home, sent home all the time, and started getting in trouble with the police. You know, I was being arrested regularly for, you know, I was very violent when I was drunk. You know, and I just remember time after time waking up in Charles Cross Police Station. I remember a few times not even knowing what I was in for. A lot of the time it wasn't serious. I remember the first time my dad having, because I was like under 17, my dad had to come into the police cell where I was, and I just remember the look on his face, and I was just so full of guilt and remorse at what I'd done. Do you know what I mean? I generally didn't like the fact that I was hurting my family and what I was doing, and I felt so bad, and I'd stopped drinking for a couple of weeks, and you know, that's how long it usually lasted, and after 2 weeks I'd just be back on it again. And the consequences just got worse and worse. You know, I started getting arrested for more serious things, started going to court. You know, I started getting charged and going to court, seeing youth offending team, people like that. My parents sent me to a counsellor, an alcohol counsellor. And these people tried to help me. You know, they gave me advice, but I mean, they didn't understand. These people just didn't understand me. Do you know what I mean? They really didn't understand me, and I wasn't ready, even if they did have a solution for me. You know, and when I was 17, I got sent to prison for 3 years, which was inevitable. It was only a matter of time before it happened. You know, and I remember when I was in there thinking, you know, when I get out, I'm just going to control my drinking. At first, I thought I'd stop drinking. Then I quickly realised I mean, for me, I think I knew deep down that I couldn't drink normally. I would never be able to drink normally. But I just denied it. I mean, because my experience of sobriety isn't good. You know what I mean? Being sober for me is a painful experience. You know, I just cannot do it. And so I really just, I just held on to this idea that I was going to control my drinking. But, you know, being an alcoholic, it's impossible. I just cannot do it. And I got out of prison. They let me out and they put me on a curfew. I had to be in at 7:15 every night, which for an alcoholic is, especially an alcoholic like me, I drink with other people. It's a real pain in the ass. I mean, I'd go to the pub at 1, I'd start drinking, and then my curfew would come up and I'd have to go home. Obviously, the craving had kicked in and I'd have to go home. And I found a way of getting rid of the craving. What I'd do is, I'd smoke so much weed and knock myself completely unconscious, and it worked. But I mean, I remember waking up in the morning and just this horrible knotted feeling in my stomach. Do you know what I mean? And I just knew that I was a loser. I mean, I'd just come out of prison, I was on the dole, and I knew I was going straight back in. You know, and 5 years ago I was doing well in life, and this is where I was. And I just felt so bad. I just felt hopeless. I felt worthless, and I was just desperate. And I came to AA. It was Damon that brought me in. He was coming at the time. And I didn't come here thinking I'm going to be able to find a solution here or anything like that. I just came here because I was just desperate. I didn't even think I was an alcoholic because, I mean, I was only 18 years old. I thought to be an alcoholic, you need to drink every single day, which I just didn't do. I thought, you know, I can stop drinking. I can stop drinking. I just can't stay stopped. I thought an alcoholic was someone that was physically addicted to alcohol, which I wasn't. But yeah, I came here anyway, and obviously I was on a tag at the time, and the meeting starts at 7:30. I had to be in at 7:15, so what I'd do is I'd turn up at 6:30, talk to the people in the meeting, and run home at 7:00. But even though I didn't go to a meeting at first, I could still see there was something here. You know, come this Friday night meeting, there was a lot of people here, and I felt this buzz and this excitement in the room. Do you know what I mean? I could sense there was something special here. I mean, you would not get this many people coming here on a Friday night if it was crap. Do you know what I mean? You just wouldn't. And talking to the guys in the meeting, I mean, they won my trust very quickly. You know, they talked to me about their drinking. I related to them, and I remember buying the big book and reading the doctor's opinion, and it describes an alcoholic in there. And I just remember very quickly just realising that I was the same as these people. You know, these people were just like me. A lot of them had drunk a lot longer than me and had taken it further, but, you know, these people were definitely like me, and I realised straight away I was an alcoholic. And, you know, I had obviously a lot of doubts. I mean, like I said, I didn't think it'd be put. I just thought, coming to AA and not drinking for the rest of my life, that is going to be boring. I'm young, I'm the kind of person, you know, I've always been the kind of person that takes things to the extreme. I need excitement in my life. I'm always looking for a buzz. And I just couldn't imagine that in AA. Do you know what I mean? Going to 3 meetings a week, and how can that possibly be fun? But, you know, the people convinced me enough just to give it a go anyway. And they told me to get a sponsor. And I asked this guy, and he was someone that, I mean, he won my trust very quickly. And he told me what to do, basically. He just gave me actions to do, simple actions. And I remember I made a decision. You know, after a couple of weeks, I decided, you know, I'm just going to do this 100%. I mean, it's quite clear that's what you had to do if you wanted to recover. And that's what I did. You know, I did all of these suggestions 100% and started being honest with my sponsor, which is something that doesn't come naturally to me. I had to really force myself at first. You know, and I changed very quickly. You know, it didn't, you know, literally after a couple of weeks, I started to feel much more comfortable in my own skin sober. I mean, I was meeting up with guys in town for coffee and just feeling all right. And, I mean, for me, I mean, if you're new and you want to recover, you don't have to wait around. It does not take long. I mean, for me, the massive change happened for me after my step 5. I mean, it was probably maybe 3 months in, you know, after my first meeting. I remember I did my step 5, and I was sat there at the front of the meeting on Friday, and I just got this massive, overwhelming feeling that everything was going to be all right. And I was just absolutely buzzing. You know, I just thought, everything is going to be all right. You know, I can actually see a life for me sober. And, you know, it was just the best feeling ever. And, you know, that has been my experience of sobriety. I can see a life for me sober. Life today, you know, as I said, I thought, you know, the AA is never going to be able to offer me the excitement that I need. But it has, and a lot more than that. I mean, you know, I've been sober for 3.5 years, and the amount of fun I'm having is unbelievable. Do you know what I mean? It really is. You know, I'm at university today. I'm doing well. You know, I get good grades. I mean, when I was in school, I remember my maths teacher said to me, "You're the biggest waste of potential I've ever met." And I took that as a compliment at the time. But, you know, today, you know, I'm pretty much top of my class. You know, I'm achieving things, and I know it's not down to me. I'm a loser without this program. I'm not capable of achieving things. All I'm capable of is going to prison. Do you know what I mean? It's only since I've come in here, come into this meeting, that these things have happened, and I love it. I love being a part of AA, and it's not a chore to do these things. Coming to meetings, I love coming to meetings. You know, occasionally I might feel, oh, I don't want to come tonight, but most of the time I absolutely love it. Do you know what I mean? And this Friday night meeting is the highlight of my week. You know, and if you're new, I mean, it may seem unachievable. It may seem like we're all a bit over enthusiastic, and you know, you may think it's hard to imagine, but you know, just do what I've done. Get a sponsor. Throw yourself in 100%. Don't hold back at all. And this is guaranteed. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
My name's Mary. I'm an alcoholic. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our visitors. And anybody new, anybody struggling, welcome. Welcome to Road to Recovery, the beating heart of Alcoholics Anonymous. Here we will show you how to recover from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. We will tell you how to get over your awful feeling of failure and defeat. And we will show you how to enjoy life. And if you are anywhere near as sour and as bitter and as twisted as I was when I came in, you probably feel a bit nauseous right now. No, I was just like the guys, you know, I was all kind of, you know, I was out of kilter with the world, I was all shy and self-obsessed, and I didn't know how to talk to boys, and I was just, life was just awful. And when I was a teenager, and I've told you this before, but it's just so brilliant, there was an advert that used to run in the colour supplements, and it was an impossibly beautiful girl, and she was skydiving, and she had this beatific smile, and there she was, going through the air, and the tagline was, she was a librarian before she discovered Smirnoff. And that was exactly how I felt about drinking. It instantly altered my perception of reality. By day, I was a shy, spotty, specky, gappy-toothed teenager. By night, I was fabulous. Actually, I was drunk, but, you know. And there were consequences right from the off, but I was prepared to live with them. To feel like that, I would live with them. But of course, it gets worse. It gets worse, and it gets worse. And in the end, the last 6 years of my drinking, I was at home alone with a bottle of vodka. And I knew I was drinking myself to death. I knew that. And it just couldn't happen soon enough. Just bring it on. What I wasn't prepared for was it was my daughter that I took to the brink of death. And I sat next to her bedside in an intensive care unit, and I prayed to a God I claimed I did not believe in to help me. I would do anything, just help me. And 2 days later, I was asked if I would see a lady who worked in the hospital, who was a well-respected nurse, and she was a member of AA. And she came to see me, and she did what I now know as 12-step me. And I came into AA, and I was desperate. I was willing to go to any length. I would do anything. But not this. Okay? Not this. You could stick your spiritual awakening. You could keep your sponsors. You could have it all. All I wanted to know was how not to drink. And I suffered. And it got worse. And it got worse. And it got worse. Until one day, my mum said to me, perhaps you're not really an alcoholic. And it was my get out of jail free card. All I had to say was, well, maybe, not really. But I knew. And I said, no, I am definitely an alcoholic. Just like them. And I went and I got a sponsor. And she took me through the steps. And I know a lot of people talk about step four, and it's a very important step. But the most important step is step one. You know, if I do anything tonight, and I hope if there's anybody in here still in denial, I smash it home to you that you will never control or enjoy your drinking. You are like a man who's lost his legs. They will never grow back. You will never be able to have one or two drinks and walk away. You're a drunk, like me.
And you will never, you see, I've never knowingly had a social drink in my life. I've been a very sociable drunk in my time, but I've never had a social drink, and I never will have. And that's okay, because today it's not an issue in my life. So I had to accept I'm powerless over alcohol, and as a result, my life was unmanageable. And once I surrendered, gave in absolutely, I began to recover. And I have a sponsor today, and I love, admire, and respect my sponsor, and I just follow my sponsor's footsteps. I always get slightly entertained by people who say, either from here or from the floor, I'm not perfect, because this voice in my head always goes, no dear, we never thought you were. But what I do try to do is always follow my sponsor's suggestions. And something happened recently. I was talking to my sponsor and he said to me, Mary, you're not listening. And I tell you, that put the fear of God in me. My blood ran cold because I wasn't listening because I didn't like what he was saying, because what he was saying didn't concur with what I was thinking. And the problem with that is my thinking got me here. That's what it brought me to my knees with alcohol. That's what it did to me. And if I start going back to my thinking, I'm back to my drinking. It's that simple. So you pull back and you just do as you're told. You just get on with it. Because it's just what you get, the rewards. I mean, it's just, I cannot begin to tell you how fabulous. Now, I knew, I came here when I was 3.5 years sober, and I was quite happy with my recovery, and I came into this meeting on a Friday night, and the atmosphere was just like nothing I had ever been to. I just thought, this is it. These guys have just got something really special, and I wanted it. And and I still want it today. I love being a member of this home group. It just thrills me. And the thing is, what happens to you in recovery? It's so good. It's so wonderful. Nothing I ever wanted is anywhere near as good as what I've got in recovery. Everything has just gone from strength to strength. This is a family illness. It almost killed my daughter. My parents were in despair. They didn't know what to do with me. My brothers didn't know what to do. My friends had given up. It's a family illness. It just brings everyone down. But by God, it's a family recovery. My daughter said to me, in the early days, she just, I don't want anything more to do with you. I'm going to leave home. I'm going to go away. I've nothing more to do with you. You have ruined my life. Probably about a year ago, her husband asked her if she'd emigrate, and she said, oh no, I couldn't live that far away from my mum. I just couldn't, The love is incredible. And that's what I've got from just following simple suggestions, from going through these 12 steps and listening to a sponsor. My mum forgets. She said to me recently, because we've got a family wedding, and she said, do you think people will get drunk? And I said, it's a wedding. There's a fair chance one or two will be drunk. And she said, I don't understand why people need to be drunk to enjoy themselves. Do you? And I said, Mum, I'm an alcoholic. I don't understand why the rest of you wait for weddings to get drunk. I don't know why you're not drunk every day. She's forgotten. She's just forgotten how bad it was, because that's it. She's also forgotten my name, by the way, which is really bizarre. Sometimes I get Mary, sometimes I get Winnie. Now I get Minnie, which is a kind of... But you know what? I'm just so... Because my dad lived to see me sober, my mum's still alive, and it's just... And they're just so wonderful, just that feeling of being part of something and really contributing and being able to be somebody who can take part in your family life and in your, and just the life of the friends and the people you love. And you can have all of that. And it's really simple. You get a sponsor, you get a big book, you get taken through the 12 steps of recovery, and you live a wonderful life. You live a life beyond your wildest dreams. And all you have to do is surrender. Thank you for listening. Good night. God bless.
Thank you, everyone. I would now like to introduce tonight's final speaker, Bob.
It's been a really good meeting up to now. My name's Bob. I'm an alcoholic. Only through the grace of a God that I was afraid to believe in that I found out AA is absolutely crazy about me and has no taste. The 12 steps, as they're outlined in the big book, good sponsorship and a persistent and dedicated commitment to the primary purpose of helping other drunks. I haven't had a drink or any mind or emotion-altering substance since Halloween 1978, which is the end of October. And I'm delighted to be here. I'd like to welcome anybody that's new. I'm real glad you're here. And I want to thank the three speakers that preceded me. They did a great job. I can tell by listening to you that drinking wasn't very good for you, was it? No. I'm glad you're sober. John, I got to thank John for driving me down here from London. He was it's a great ride. He got me closer to God that trip down here. sometime this week, I stood on a bridge with a bottle of a wine that had never seen a grape. It was 20% alcohol, and it was called Richard's Wild Irish Rose, and it was my drink of choice because it was the most amount of alcohol for the least amount of money. And I was on this bridge with that bottle of wine trying to get up enough courage to take my own life. And I'm on that bridge for two reasons. One is that I finally know something that is true, that is unacceptable to me. And what that is no matter what I do, I cannot jumpstart the party. And I can't, and not from a lack of trying, I cannot get back to when alcohol provided a sense of ease and comfort, when it seemed to give me a feeling like maybe it was going to be okay no matter how bad it seemed. A feeling like I could fit, that I could be free. I couldn't get that feeling back, and I've burnt my life to the ground, and I've done it repeatedly now. By this time, it's been 7 years of relapses, 7 years of institutions, 7 years of swearing to myself and meaning it with everything in me. I'm never going to touch that stuff again, and 7 or 8 weeks or 7 or 8 months later, I'm back at it again. 7 years of hell. And isn't it odd that the most horrific, painful, disgusting years of my life were after I came to Alcoholics Anonymous? I don't think there's a hell on earth worse than sitting in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous needing the answer that's here and not having it. There's a loneliness of sitting in these rooms if you've never done the deal. And I know that. It's a depressing, lonely thing. And I'm on this bridge because I can't, there's no more, the medicine has stopped working, and I can't seem to imagine life without it. And a doctor had said something to me that prior year that should have been good information. It should have been a positive thing. And it wasn't. He told me that because I was in my 20s, that I was young enough and healthy enough that I could go on like I was going on for another 5 or 10 more years. And I'm telling you, that's not going to happen. And I'm on that bridge to make sure that that doesn't happen. And I'm on that bridge basically because alcohol had turned on me. The medicine that had been so fantastic at one time in my life had become so horrible. The last couple years of my drinking, I gave up. I didn't really care. I didn't work hardly. Sometimes I'd have a job for a couple weeks in a halfway house, and then I'd get a paycheck and get drunk again and lose everything and be out on the streets again. I lived on the streets. I had those sores that won't heal because I don't eat. I'm not against eating. It's just I can only put together so much money hustling on the streets every day, and I'm not going to eat up my drinking money. It's not going to happen. And so I don't eat. I have urine-soaked pants, and I've had them for I can't even tell you how long. and I just walk around with them. I feel sorry for myself continually. There's a loneliness that brings me to weep at times as I remember all the friends I once had. And I remember some of the women that had loved me. And I remembered my mother and father who cared about me and would have done anything to help me. And I am pathetic. And I am on this bridge because a doctor said I might be able to go on like this for another 5 years. No, sir. But I've always had this secret that I hated about me, and it saved my life. And the secret is that I've always secretly been afraid. I covered up with violence, and I carried weapons. I did a lot of stuff to make you think I'm not afraid. I engaged in fights. I sucker punched people to show them I'm not scared. But underneath all the facade is I'm scared to death. And I always have been, and I've always hated that about myself. A more courageous person would have been able to kill themselves. But at the last moment, when it was time to make the jump, I broke down and started sobbing and cursing myself for being what I was. And I didn't know that I would end up in Alcoholics Anonymous again, as I did many, many times. But something would be different. Something would change inside of me. And I... There's an aspect to me that almost killed me. And what that aspect is that I fit the old adage, you can always tell an alcoholic, but you can't tell him much. Right? I'm that guy. I can start drinking, burn my life to the ground. The first thing I get back is my opinion. You know, I'm the I know guy. I'm the guy that after about 8 or 10 days of being sober, I'm feeling better physically. I'm the guy you can't tell nothing to. I'm the guy that sits there and if you try to tell me something, you go, yeah, I know. Uh-huh. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. You know what I'm really saying is shut up. I'm the guy who sits in meetings because I have to, and I sit, if I can, in the back of the room because you need a spot where you can judge properly. And I sit there and I just, in my head, I just discount everything that the people say in AA. I just make them out to be stupid and idiots and lames. I tell these little stories to myself about how they're phony and how they're just making that up. And boy, look at that guy. Isn't he full of himself? And I would be willing to bet there's at least one person in this room doing that to me at this moment. And if you are, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that that was my ego. I didn't know what was killing me. Some very well-intentioned counselors had told me that the problem why I'd ruined my life and why I was dying was because of alcohol and combinations of alcohol and drugs. You know, I understand how they could think that. I mean, I'm in trouble and alcohol's in the picture, but that's not it. And I know that that's not it. And the reason I know that that's not it is that I get sober and I really try. And my God, there's something else wrong with me. After a while, abstinence feels like I'm doing time. After a while, my emotions just start putting the screws to me. After a while, I just get worn out by the things I worry about all the time. After a while, I'm just tired of the loneliness and the depression. After a while, something inside of me just gets tired of being locked up in here. And I just scream for freedom. And what happens is every time I start just yearning to bust out, I remember something that could bust me out like that. There was a time in my life where 4 shots of tequila and I could get free. 4 shots of whiskey and I could come out and play. 4 shots of whiskey and I just, everything that was on me would just go away. And I just, and I was okay. Now in my yearning for freedom and relief, I can't see past the yearning for freedom. I can't see the truth. Our book says the alcoholic after a time can't differentiate the true from the false. I can't see that what's really true is I haven't gotten free from alcohol in a couple years like that. That when I drink, it's pathetic. When I drink, all I get is the phenomenon of craving, which compels me to always want one more. And I've had that phenomenon of craving since I was almost 13 years old, took my first drink. I can't see the truth that alcohol had turned on me and it's awful. I can't see past my need to feel better. And so I pick up a drink and that phenomenon of craving kicks in. And if you're an alcoholic of my type and you pick up a drink, it doesn't matter how long you're sober. It doesn't matter what kind of a job you have. It doesn't matter if there's now a couple people that love you again. If you pick up a drink, it's like having sex with a gorilla. You ain't done till the gorilla's done. You know what I'm saying? You can tell yourself all you want. All you can tell yourself all you want. We're just going to have a dance. It ain't happening. Because as I ingest alcohol into my system, as the effect starts to hit me from the alcohol, I break out in an irresistible need for more of that effect. I've had that my whole life. I have never once in all the years that I drank ever been in a bar or a pub somewhere or at a party drinking for an hour and have the bartender say, "Bob, hey, Bob, would you like another drink?" I have never had the experience of sitting there and thinking to myself, honestly, "No, this is just right. I don't really need another one." No. I've never had that experience. It's always one more, one more. As a matter of fact, I am the guy that if I drink to the point where I can't get off the floor and I'm still conscious, I will be talking people into bringing me a drink, right? I'm that guy. I've actually had that happen. And so I pick up a drink and it starts that thing. It lets that beast out of the cage. I can't get it back in until until there's nothing much left of me. And I'm begging some guy for a bed somewhere, or I'm waking up somewhere with ink on my fingers because I'd been arrested the night before and fingerprinted again. And I never come off a drunk in a good spot. You know, the end of a run has never been good for me. I don't know why. It's never good. And I can't do this no more. And I know now the truth. And I know the truth is no matter what I drink, no matter what I take, I can't get that effect back anymore. And I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know why. I don't know why I keep going back to it. I had spent, in that 7-year period, I'd been to some wonderful psychiatrists. I had been diagnosed several different things. I had been treated and medicated for several different disorders, and none of them really helped. They would help for a little while. You'd get a little hope, and then I'm always back to being me again. I remember therapeutic weekends where they wouldn't let you sleep. I went to this one, and it was fantastic. Changed my life for 2 weeks. Right? And I'm always back to being me again. And what is that? It's back to being the guy who has to pretend like he's okay. Back to being the guy who pretends he fits. Back to being the guy who pretends he's tough. Back to being the guy who pretends he's not afraid. Back to being the guy who's a pretend human being. And my God, there was a time when I drank, I didn't pretend. I really was okay. And I can't get it back no more. So I'm on this bridge and I'm dying. And if you would have asked me about AA at that point, I would have told you I tried AA and it didn't work. I'd never tried AA. I'd been to probably 200 meetings. But I had never bought this whole package. I had never done any of these steps. I had never had a sponsor. For about 3 weeks I had a sponsor briefly because I thought he could get me a good job. More importantly than having a sponsor, I was never sponsorable. There's too much of me between me and you. I'm the guy who's so full of myself and my perception and my judgments that there's no room for anything else. And it's funny how I would have told you I was, I'm teachable. I'm open-minded. I'm open-minded to anything that agrees with me. But take an action that I didn't believe in or do something I didn't feel like doing? No. I at times had done things like that under the gun because I wanted your approval. But I couldn't surrender the one thing. A guy in the year before I got sober, in a jail cell, a guy, a member from AA, brought a meeting in there and he told me that I was probably going to die of alcoholism because I hadn't surrendered. And I remember when he said that, I didn't know what he was talking about. I thought, surrender what? There's nothing left of me. A couple years ago, I had a motorcycle. I had a nice car. I had a girlfriend. I had a good job. I think I might have even had a little self-respect, for God's sakes, at one point. But there's nothing left of me here. Surrender what? I almost wanted to scream at him, what do you want? But I didn't do none of that. I didn't scream at him. I didn't say nothing. I just sat in that meeting and just thought at him. Do you ever think at someone in a meeting? I always thought it was that one of the great shames of the universe and the great injustices is that when I hate people, they don't feel it. Very unfair to me. God knows I feel it. I didn't know what he meant, surrender. In 1978, after trying to kill myself and failing, I ended up back in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't know that I had actually been surrendered by the bottle. I didn't know that. All I knew is for the first time in 7 years, I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I could actually hear people. For the first time in 7 years, I sat in meetings and when my first sponsor, Dick, and some of the other members of AA were sharing their stories, I would sit there and I would nod my head and I'd think to myself, oh my God, I'm like that. And all of the me that was between me and you had been kicked out of me. And for the first time I could hear you. That ego that wants to judge you and judge me and figure things out, that part of me that thinks it knows, was gone. Temporarily. It eventually grew back like a bad tumor later, but it was at that point, it was kicked out of me enough that I could finally hear you and I got a sponsor. And I got a home group, and I got some commitments in Alcoholics Anonymous, and unbeknownst to me, I was tethering me here. So later, when I became the judgmental guy, the guy that couldn't help but find fault with everybody in AA and everything in life, period, that it, for God's sakes, at least by then, I was tethered here, and you could protect me from me. And this ego that I got is a hideous, hideous thing. I've come to understand that it doesn't care about anything except being top dog and being right. It doesn't even care if it kills me, as long as after I'm dead, everybody realizes that Bob was right. I remember ending up in an emergency room at a hospital one time, and I was in there because I'm a knucklehead when I drink and I hurt myself. And I'm in the waiting room, and there's a rack of literature, medical literature, in this waiting room of this emergency. And I grabbed this pamphlet, and it was 7 warning signs of cancer. And I'm starting, and I'm in my half rummy state, I'm like thumbing through this pamphlet. And one of the things that caught my attention in there is it said one of the warning signs of cancer was continuing bleeding. Well, I'm bleeding on both ends. And I remember reading that, and I just went into this whole world in my head about it. And for months and months, I was just, I got cancer. And it must have metastasized to my brain. That would explain a lot. Oh my God, I'm going to die of cancer. I got a brain tumor. And the more I thought about it, it made perfect sense. I could kind of feel it in there, you know. And that would explain why I do bizarre things and don't remember them later, and all kinds of stuff. And I could picture what would happen. One day, what's going to happen is they're going to find out that I got cancer. They're going to take me to a hospital where they treat cancer patients. They're going to notify my mother and father and sister. And they're going to notify my old girlfriends and bosses. And everybody's going to run to the hospital ashamed of themselves. You know, realizing how wrong. Bob, we thought you were a bum. We didn't know. You had a brain tumor. And I'm going to be dead, but I'm going to be right. And that's really good for me. As a matter of fact, when I found out it was an ulcer and hemorrhoids, I was disappointed. I kind of wanted a second opinion. I mean, now that's bizarre. And if you identify with that even a little bit, let me tell you something. That does not give you a high mental health quotient. Right, the year before I got sober, I was in this park. And I'm drinking this cheap wine, and I'm remembering a telephone conversation I had with my mother. It was the last conversation I had with her, and my parents, who at one time loved me, would have nothing to do with me anymore. And in the last conversation I had with my mother, she told me about some of the guys I'd gone to high school with, and how well they were doing. And one of the guys that I went to high school with was now an intern. He was about to become a doctor. Another guy was an insurance broker, and he had his own agency. And another guy was some sort of an engineer, and he had his second kid, and he was just bought another house. And I remember sitting there now in the park, and I got a bottle of wine. I got wine sores. I'm living in an abandoned building. I hate myself. I'm dirty. I'm pathetic. And yet I'm sitting there drinking this bottle of wine and thinking about those guys with their houses and everything and thinking to myself smugly, yeah, but they couldn't take it living like this. As if I was superior to them. And this alcoholic ego of mine is insistent. It's unbelievable. And as the years went on and the disease of alcoholism progressed, that's what progressed. And you couldn't tell me nothing. I've noticed an odd thing in me, and I think I've talked to a lot of people over the years, and I think this is true in a lot of us, is that my spirit or sense of worth or self-esteem and my ego are diametrically opposed to each other, almost as if they're on a teeter-totter. When I'm having a spiritual bad hair day, that's when my ego seems to rise up. That's when I don't feel like I am okay and I'm not enough. That's when I have to tear you down. That's when I find the most fault with life. That's when I'm the most irritable. As if I can judge you and tear you down, and maybe I'll level the playing field, and I won't feel so awkward and uncomfortable and unright. But all it ever did for me was just made me feel more alone and more separate. On a good spiritual hair day, when I'm working with new guys and I'm trusting God and I'm cleaning the house and I have everything as current in my life and I'm working with my sponsor, when I look around me, you look pretty good to me. You don't look perfect. But you know what I see when I look at you? I see me. I see people that are struggling with the same fears and insecurities that I struggle with. I see myself in you. Because at that point, there's not a whole bunch of me between me and you. And I can see you. And you're me. When I ain't doing too right spiritually and my ego's out of control, that's when I look around me and all I see is a bunch of self-centered jerks that need straightening out. And this thing inside me, if I ever leave Alcoholics Anonymous, I've watched guys leave AA. If you're new and you're dying of alcoholism and you know you have to stay here, in order to stay here, you have to learn how to leave here. How do people leave? And most people leave Alcoholics Anonymous one judgment at a time. And they don't even know they're leaving. They just think that people in AA are getting sick. And they're just going like this. Until your disease has you right where it wants you. And I'll tell you, my ego doesn't care. It will use the traditions, it'll use the steps, it'll use the big book. And it has many times when I'll sit in meetings and I'll just sit there and go, what kind of program does he have? Jeez. I bet you he doesn't even have a sponsor. Can you feel the pump of the ego as it feels smugly superior? If you're new, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. AA for guys like you and me. We have good news and bad news. The good news, this is an effective treatment for what's really secretly wrong with you. The bad news, it doesn't work as fast as 5 shots of tequila. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Because of the size of the meeting, could you try to keep your shares to approximately 2 minutes? And do not be offended if you're asked to stop by my sounding the bell. Also, with those wishing to share, please raise your hands. The meeting is now open.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.